The following is a pre-recorded program and is not live.
As they say with all great stories, let's start at the beginning. Everything kind of starts with this research study about the Hadza people, who are a modern hunter-gatherer tribe in Tanzania. Tell me, what were you studying there, and what was it like living and learning from the Hadza?
Yeah, so, I'm an anthropologist. I study human evolution, how our bodies were shaped by our past and how they work today. And, you know, the lifestyles in that humans evolved in is hunting and gathering lifestyles, right? So hunting and gathering was the norm for everybody for 2.5 million years. You know, before we're Homo sapiens, we're hunting and gathering. And so if you want to understand how the human body works in a kind of evolutionary ecological way, then you want to find, you know, a group today, if you can, that has some of those same cultural elements. I mean, we're all modern humans. We're all, you know, the same species, everything, but there are some populations, not many, that hold on to these old cultural traditions and allow us to have some kind of a window into what that lifestyle is like. The Hadza are one of those groups. So they live in northern Tanzania, in the savanna there, you know, living in grass houses, in small camps around the savanna. And they don't have any domesticated crops or animals or machines or guns or electricity or plumbing or anything like that. Every day they wake up and go out and get wild animals and wild plant foods to eat and wild honey. And so it's just this amazing opportunity to go out and kind of see that sort of a culture and live with those folks and sort of partner with them on this work, right? I mean, you know, you're sort of hanging out in their space, and I should just say they're really generous and kind folks to sort of play along and be so welcoming while we go out there and work and do that work. So it's, you know, it, like any travel, it's always fun to see other cultures and sort of experience that and live alongside people. Maybe more so with a group that's so different than the kind of norms that we're used to here in the U.S.
Right. It must have been fun explaining things like radio waves and other technologies that maybe they hadn't seen before. So yeah, it's a collaboration. Yeah. And also I think it's kind of funny. Like, I don't know. I was just trying to imagine what it would be like for, how did you convince them to put the masks on? Cause I remember you're describing what it's like and like this like portable thing carrying a briefcase. And I can't imagine that's natural. Right. So what was it like, you know, for them to experience how you do the research on people?
Yeah. So, because the Hadza are one of the few hunting and gathering groups around, most others have been, you know, moved to villages or reservations pretty tragically, actually, around the globe, but the Hadza have held on. But because they're so unique in that way, they're used to people coming out and researching, doing research with them. I mean, people have been working with the Hadza doing research for decades now. Tourists come out to some of the camps that are closer to towns. They don't go to the sort of far off ones that we work in, but the Hadza are familiar with the outside world. I think, you know, too often when I talk about the Hadza, people get this, if you've ever seen the movie, The Gods Must Be Crazy.
No, I haven't.
It's very campy and it kind of gives the wrong impression of what these groups are like. But it is a funny movie, I have to say, but it's even if it's wrong headed. In The Gods Must Be Crazy, this group of folks, it's actually the San in Namibia is who it's based on. You know, they find a Coke bottle and, you know, it's this, oh my gosh, it opens this idea to the outside world and they're totally amazed and it completely changes everything. Right. And I think people have that sort of mindset, like, oh my gosh, don't go in and tell them too much. Cause you might ruin their culture. Or they might find out about the outside world or something like that. But that gives you the wrong impression, right? That they're not trapped in amber. They know about the outside world. You know, they choose not to engage, but they know about it. So you can't tell them anything they don't already know, you know, sort of.
Yeah.
They're more like the Amish. I don't know if you guys have a lot of Amish or old order, like Mennonite.
Yeah, there's a bit of Wisconsin Amish, like just up north of Madison even.
Yeah. Yeah. I grew up in Pennsylvania. We had a number of communities there. And that's at least the ones that I grew up around. You know, they of course they know about the outside world, you know?
Yeah.
And some of them decide to engage, but then other communities decide completely not to engage and live kind of a 1700s farmstead lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they know that, you know, so that's the same thing with the Hadza. They know about the outside world. And how do you get them to play along? Well, you know, the same way that we would get anybody who we want to, you know, do research here at my lab at Duke. You know, we ask, we say, hey, this is what we want to do. Here's what it's going to entail. You know, we compensate them for their time. We give them things that they would otherwise, you know, trade for. So things like blankets or sandals, that kind of thing. It's not a cash economy, really. So we don't usually do cash. But you know, in the same way that I would respect you by compensating you for your time, if you came to my lab and did some work, we respect them and compensate them. And they don't have to do it if they don't, and nobody has to do anything they want to do, you know? So, but it's been really fun. And actually what happens is, rather than trying to convince them to sort of go along with it, usually when we move into a camp, if anything, the camp numbers tend to grow. They move pretty freely between camps. So if anything, you know, as word gets out that the researchers are over there, I think just out of curiosity people kind of come over. So it's a two-way street, and it's a, you know, mutual respect and a lot of like real friendships with people there. It's one of the best parts about working there.
Cool. And I guess here's like the question, you know, the big revelation that came from the study is that they're burning the same number of calories as we do here in the US. So why is it that so many people have it wrong about diet and exercise and metabolism? Because this was like the bombshell fact that came out for me.
That's right. So that's exactly right. So they get more physical activity in a day than the average American gets in a week. Right. We've measured that. So you put like step counters, you know, have them wear like a smartwatch kind of a thing. They get tons of activity and they are very healthy, and the activity certainly helps with the health. But we expected, because they're so active, that they'd burn lots of calories, and they don't. Like you say, they burn the same number of calories as we do here in the US or any industrialized countries. That was such a big shock. And so why do we get it wrong here? Well, you know, unless you're doing this work for your career, then you kind of, you know what you're told, right?
I mean, yeah, yeah.
if you ask me how a computer works, well, I can tell you however I was told a computer works, right? And if it turned out that was different, then I would be, oh, that would be surprising to me. you know, how does anything work? And if we're told, and we're constantly told that the number of calories we burn is just completely related to how active we are, and it really isn't that simple. And the Hadza work was just sort of that aha moment for me. There's been work over the last few decades that have been pointing in this direction. People kind of hadn't been paying attention to it. But that was an aha moment for me, was that Hadza project. And since then, that's just sort of blown up into this research program that we do to sort of understand how that all works.
Well, you know, it's funny because I also kind of found a lot of this, you know, a little hard to like wrap my mind around, because I found some of it to be counterintuitive. I'm like, whoa, that's how it is. I have some facts written down here. I'm just gonna go through it and like maybe you can explain it better. So you burn the same number of calories walking as you do running, and apparently what matters more is the distance you've traveled. So per mile you burn the same calories.
You've simplified it a bit there. So when you walk, the cost per calorie changes with speed. So at a comfortable walk, you're burning very few calories, about like half as many calories as you'd burn per mile running. But as you walk faster and faster and faster, the calories per mile goes up. It's a kind of a U-shaped curve. And eventually, at around the same time that your body, at around the speed that your body's like, this is uncomfortable, I'd rather be jogging, that's when you cross over into when it's actually more economical to jog. And then from slow jogging up through super fast running, it's the same energy per mile, no matter how fast you run, right? So if you go out down to the track and you run four laps on the track, that's a mile, right?
Mm-hmm.
You run those four laps in 20 minutes. You run those four laps in 10 minutes. You run those four laps in 5 minutes, if you can do it. You've burned the same number of calories for those four laps. Now it feels a lot harder to do it in five if you can even manage it, or it feels harder to do it in 10 than in 20.
Gotta say, but, it's, never got that five.
yeah. It's, I'm not sure I could anymore either, but that's the difference is how hard it feels.
Okay.
But that's, you know, and that gets to an important thing. The way that we feel about how our bodies burn energy comes down to our perceptions of effort, perceptions of fatigue, perceptions of, you know, how hard it is to stay at the weight we want to stay at, you know? Yep. So we have all these sort of intuitive measures about energy, and they're all called, because we're not really careful about how we teach people in school. We're not really careful about how we talk about it in magazines and online. Those concepts are all loosely connected to calorie expenditure, to how our bodies are actually burning the calories, but not in a one-to-one kind of way. So it's so easy. There's so much room for error there because we're sloppy in the ways that we talk about these things.
Yeah. Okay. So this plays into another fact that I wasn't sure of, that apparently burning more energy doesn't protect you against gaining weight. So yeah, if you're burning a lot of it, it still matters on how much the intake is. So at the end of the day, it's really just calorie deficit, calorie surplus, right?
Is that? Yeah. I mean, it really boils down to that. And everything else is marketing. Right. So, calories don't matter. Try this diet. Calories don't matter. Try that diet. And really what those diets do is make you feel full on less if they're working for you. And you know that. So if it's low carb, if it's plant-based, the reason those work when they work is that you're eating fewer calories. And so people are very good at marketing them in other ways. Oh, you can eat as many calories as you want. Well, right. But you just won't want more calories if you only eat, you know, these five foods. But that's right. And it's true that, you know, our energy expenditure, the calories you burn per day, is kind of like height. Some people are tall, some people are short. Mm-hmm. Some people burn a little bit more calories, some people burn a bit fewer calories. But that, if you have a higher or low energy burn per day, doesn't actually predict if you're going to gain weight or lose weight. That was a big surprise in the 1980s. One of the early pieces of work that came out in the 1980s using this new technique that we use now regularly, but this new technique, this isotope tracking technique that allows us to measure energy expenditure during normal daily life. You don't have to be in the lab. Okay. You know, you, Kai, can go out. We can measure you during a week of your normal life. People did that, did a study in the 80s thinking, okay, we're finally going to pin this down. People who are overweight or people who have obesity, we're going to be able to show that they have these slow metabolism, and that's why. And it didn't work that way at all. In fact, they had the same, on average, they have the same metabolism as everybody else. For their size, actually they burn more calories just by virtue of being a bit bigger. But if you correct for that body size issue, they look like everybody else. So there's nothing special about the metabolisms of people who are thin or obese.
Okay. And before we get further into the diets and just the ideas of how that affects people's individually, let's talk about like what a calorie is. What's the definition of a calorie, and why are all our nutrition labels lying to us?
Yeah. Well, so calorie is the amount of energy it takes to take 1 milliliter of water up 1 degree Celsius. Mm-hmm. That's the definition of a calorie. And so it's funny when people say, well, is a calorie? It reminds me of that old kid's joke, what weighs more, a pound of feathers or a pound of rocks? You know, it's like, well, yep, they both weigh
the same. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Now, would you rather get hit in the face with a pound of feathers or get hit in the face with a pound of rocks?
All right. See, that's right? A good follow up.
Yeah. So they might have different effects. But, you know, foods can have different effects, but that doesn't mean the calorie is not a calorie. Anyhow. And so we get it, you know, the food labels are wrong for, well, they're misleading for at least one big reason. That is, they tell us that we all burn 2000 calories a day, or that's the average American diet. Well, you know, I have a 9-year-old boy. He might burn 9,000 calories a day, but adults burn, you know, women burn about 2,400 calories a day, 25. Men burn about 3,000 calories a day, and there's variation around that, but you know, mm-hmm. that's a far cry from 2,000.
Right. So that's not the average. And so when we make those comparisons, it's just good to understand that that's not really where it comes from. And a lot of it comes from the idea that we're not good at reporting how many calories we're eating ourselves. Right.
That's right. I mean, it's almost a useless number in any case, because we know that if we try to ask you to keep track of your calories that you eat, you will miss about 30% of your calories. Somewhere between a fourth and a third of your calories that you eat, you will forget or misreport or whatever. And we don't know why people are so bad at this, but this is across the board, across populations, across the globe. We're terrible at this. And so, you know, when people say, oh, calories don't matter, it's like, well, you know, just because you're a bad accountant doesn't mean that dollars don't matter, right? I mean, just because you're bad at keeping track of your books doesn't mean that, you know, that they don't go
you
up
see
and down
Herman money. I don't want to let you know that I ate a Krispy Kreme donuts. Yeah, I just don't want that on the report.
You know, it's so funny, and this isn't work that I do, this is other people's labs, but it's so funny because I go to these conferences and they report these wonderful results. People not only conveniently forget the Krispy Kreme donut, they then conveniently somehow remember the apple that never happened.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I get you. I get you. Yeah. So, okay. So on that note, continuing past that with diet, so what is it about diet that makes them so hard to follow? Why is it so hard for us to stick to them?
Yeah, well, your body doesn't want to change weight. That's one thing. Your body seems to want to have to kind of stay at a set point. To change that set point, your body, you need to be eating fewer calories, but your brain, it doesn't want to burn fewer calories. It wants to keep things the same. And so when you try to get onto a diet that can get you to a thinner weight, if that's something that you need to do or want to do, you have to find a diet that makes you feel full on fewer calories. How do you do that? If I could tell you how to do that consistently, I would write a different book and I'd be I'd fly around in my private jet. But the principles that seem to work for people are more protein or more fiber in your diet and stay away from ultra processed foods. And that's because we know that approach, does good things for how your brain signals how full you feel and how much energy you need to burn.
And how can we, it's not just keeping to these diets, but also understanding our environments are not really supportive of maintaining a healthy diet here in the US. We have the obesity crisis and we have, processed foods and fast food culture all around us. How can we overcome this? What is it that we can do better?
Yeah. We engineered these really strange environments that we live in. Right, we built ourselves these zoos, and it's like, well, if you literally let the monkeys build the zoo, what would it look like? Right, there'd be candy in every corner, and there would be no work to do, and that's kind of what happened. We let we're the monkeys. We built the zoo, and guess what? It looks like we built ourselves a candy store, and that's the problem. And so, it's to fix that problem, because it really is our environments. People outside of these Western weird industrialized environments don't have this issue. So really it is the environment. And how do we fix the environment? Well, again, that's another million-dollar question, but we have to get processed foods out. We have to make it. And I think the way you do that personally, is you price them, accurately. So in other words, the cost of a donut doesn't just reflect the pennies of sugar and flour in there, but it reflects some measure of the health impact of that, because we're all going to have to bear the burden of this health, of this choice, in terms of our medical costs as a society. And on the other side, maybe you use that money. I'm not an economist, but maybe you use that money to make healthy foods cheaper, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe you use that money to make apples and whole foods and grains and vegetables and good meats. You may maybe make them all cheaper. I don't know. That's an idea.
Maybe we can all go on the Hadza diet.
Yeah, that would be a hard one to sell, wouldn't it? Yeah, I mean, it's not a very attractive diet. A lot of charred meat and tubers. But but that's just it, isn't it? I mean, the only foods they have available are really filling, but they're not sort of engineered in a lab to be overconsumed, which is what processed foods are.
So, what is next for your research goals? What is left for you to learn about metabolics and the energy expenditures out there?
Yeah. Well, the nice thing about energy expenditure is it is literally sort of everything.
Everything, right?
Everything you do is energy expenditure. Every task your body has, reproduction, growth, everything. And so in our lab right now, we've got 100 projects going on, it feels like, that just sort of have their fingers in all these different questions. And one thing we're really focused on right now is trying to track down exactly how your body adjusts to more physical activity to keep total energy expenditure the same. How is it that a group like the Hadza can have the same calorie expenditure as a group like, your typical American adults? And we think that that's actually a really important piece of the puzzle. So that as you exercise more, your body is reducing energy expenditure on things like inflammation and things like stress reactivity. And so that could be a really important reason that exercise is so good for you. But we need to, that's the idea. Now the next step in science is to track that down and see if that's how it works. And so that's what I'm focused on going forward. But that's in addition to a bunch of other fun stuff, because energy is everywhere. So you get to do everything if you do energetics.
Okay, perfect. That is Dr. Herman Ponser, professor of evolutionary anthropology at Duke University and author of the book Burn, New Research Blows the Lid Off of How We Really Burn Calories, Stay Healthy, and Lose Weight. Thank you for joining us today.
That was fun. Thanks for having me.